Poetry on the Radio. Poetry in and around the ACT. Today and next week, we delve into the ArtSound Poetry Archives to hear Judith Beveridge read in 1994. Plus the Rhyming Bugle, poetry events and news from around the region. For ArtSound FM Community Radio, I'm Peter Searles. Today, we visit the ArtSound Poetry Archives to hear Judith Beveridge read in 1994 at the Australian Defence Force Academy. Poet and critic Michael Brennan calls Judith Beveridge one of Australia's most gifted poets of both the natural and the human world, often allowing the interconnection between these two realms to shine forth in moments of both praise and deep consciousness. According to Jeff Page, she is able to feel her way into the situation or plight of other humans or animals and convince us at once of their integrity and complexity. Born in London in 1956, Judith Beveridge migrated to Australia with her family in 1960. In just a few volumes of verse, she has, as observers have put it, managed to pull off that complicated coup of being pleasing to both the literary critic and lay reader alike. Clive James said of her verse, "Quite apart from its unfailing dignity of movement and quiet splendour of analytical diction, what I find daunting in her poetry is how it examines in microscopic detail the order of natural events that I usually fail to notice at all." Beginning with The Domesticity of Giraffes, 1987, all her books have won major prizes. Judith Beveridge long taught creative writing at the University of Sydney and was poetry editor for Meanjin from 2005 to 2015.
I thought that today I would read some new work. So I'll start with the first one, really. This one is called My Neighbour Blowing Grass Blades. Tonight, the way he blows grass blades between his thumbs, there is no loneliness sadder than the chirr of crickets, than the cockatoo creaking on its perch like a bedside clock. And tonight, like a diarist, he reworks memory and pain. He puts another note into the vast Serengeti of his hands, his mouth pressed against the edge like a cage. And I hear how lost it is, that shrieking over the grass, his hands awash with sun, his face dappled with shadows like flies, his mouth pressed into the twin tracks of his thumbs. He searches for where the sun crosses, where he can see fire blow across the plain at dusk, birds scatter out of grasses. Finally, a heron settles on the pale panel of water and shakes its tired wings. My neighbour opens his hands to the night and walks away. I love going to nurseries and those sorts of places and looking at all the different names of flowers, and particularly roses, I think, have just absolutely fantastic and evocative names. This poem is called Naming Roses. This one is called Grandchild. This, Happy Days. This one, Soliloquy. This is Crosby. And this one, Maria Callas. Blossoms of light they stand, idle and blessed like luminaries. Soon in her hands she would hold the spent petals the public scents. But for a moment she pauses, lifts her head, as if some perfume takes her back through open gardens and doors, to a woman holding roses close to her face. A bright red bunch given to her with words and sweet breath, with promises and days to order with wine and music of venues and events. She hears the music she would love to sing to as she pauses over the roses, and her life is no longer here in this chill afternoon garden, but is a fragrance that travels incognita in her hands, singular and rare. She intones the idyll in each unhurried petal and listens to the ways some days are shaped, rendezvous, soiree, tete-a-tete, and all the paths are full that fill the intimate fragrance of her life. Each rose a door swinging open as she strays, then leaves, room by room for the night, whispering cheer, fiesta, camaraderie, as if she knew she would never be more alone than she wanted. Past stage door, recital, double ovation, as if roses would always be giving their lives and their small performances, as if she will always be bending to roses on calm, clear nights, as if each was the stairway out of a stuffy house. And by bending close to the pure fragrance of her life, she could sing any song she wanted, any way she chose. This one is called My Father Singing. What is he singing, my father? While the spider seals its fly into a cradle of floss, and a bee into the torn heart of a flower? Is he an idol with a flower map? And does the child, whose head is a rose, belong only to the music he knows? A spider catches a thread out, and all is a child's breath, held for a wire dancer's tiptoe. What is he singing, my father, as insects pull needle-thin tracks and lay their painstaking travels across his arms, his shoulders, as a child's love seeks him in the garden's silks and stalks, in the shadows flickering over him as blowflies convene and scatter over the fallen plums. Now he sings as the child sits with her child, a thin tablecloth of moonlight, a white linen on the grass. But what is he singing, my father, tonight on the cool grass? The wind comes with songs given, songs taken back, and the stem-winding grub twists the feathers of a bird, hooting and cawing in the trees, looking endlessly into the dark. I wish my father was still singing. I wish the bird of pitiful loss sang to the wind, pinning its wings to the branches of a wide moon. I wish the tall man was still singing while lifting the child to his arms. The peacock on the lawn. It preens like a young prince, flashes its tail like private shade. It knows the weight of that tail, a mogul's palace, a zookeeper's key. Down in the gully it will call the hens into the scented cedars. But just now, each feather rises as if to a trained flute, as if the gem of an adder's eye turned the lawn into a makeshift ballroom. You can imagine an old Victrola winding down, white ladies tumbling onto the cushions of a sofa as the fans turn. And just now, as it tried to lift each feather with equal weight, bending its head like a saint or a violinist given over to a deference it does not wholly understand, I thought of a child's hands lifting through Czerny or Brahms on late afternoons, struggling to free the right notes from the wrong, the tune from the encumbrance of her errors. She would dream of the music lifting into a room scented with peppermint and orange, and the feet of the dancers tumbling with an insouciance equal to the twirls and flourishes of the steps of those imponderable songs. But her fingers unable to turn the music past her childhood or the camphors of a stale room would drop to the keys, jarring her tunes under mahogany and noise. The way this peacock bundles its feathers into the shadows of an afternoon full of the music of easy Victrolas. I see on a lit deck a girl turning with the women and fans. I tend to write quite a few poems about seascapes, bays, beaches, that sort of thing. I've always really loved that kind of beauty. This poem's called There Is a Haunting Music Round the Bay. There is a haunting music round the bay. I hear it in the wind that howls in the lanyard ropes the sailor reeves through the dead eyes. I hear it as he clangs a deckhand's oar and chants back to shore with a coracle's catch. I hear it in the nets that drag over the decks and in the sinkers that roll across piers with the periwinkles washed from their rock pools, and as a deckie bellows a flagon song into the hole of evening. I hear it as spray is hissed through blowholes in towering jets, and when I put a shell to my ear and the sea discharges a long shoreman's song of the sun turning in the oar-working cry of the gull and enters the tumbling circlets of the waves and the islets of the running threads the men keep close and slide through their fingers. There is a haunting music round the bay. It enters the string work of yachtsmen who sing about leaving for the islands. It enters the voices left in the strings of boxes echoing on the windy slopes and in the pines that sway and disperse their needles on the Sunday streets. I hear it in the hum and turn of the wind on the edge of water where oarsmen make round music of their muscles and net workers work with their eyelet ears. I hear it in the sea pools where infusorians wave their delicate hairs. And as an old deckie dashes his flagon against the rocks and distributes the glass scales of the yachts that float out with the tide, and a child with driftwood blows into the wind, there is a haunting music round the bay. I spent a bit of time in India about 3 years ago and wrote about 4 or 5 poems of some of the things that I observed there. And one was just simply a man washing himself using a railway station tap, and it was obvious that he was very poor and he didn't have his own water supply, so he would come every day to the station and wash himself. So the poem is Man Washing on a Railway Platform Outside of Delhi. It's the way he stands, nearly naked in the winter sun, turning on and off the railway station tap. I have seen people look less reverent tuning Mozart. I have seen hands give coins to beggars, appear nonchalant compared to the way his hands give this water to his body. Don't tell me this is a man released for a moment out of poverty, a man who wants the penance of each cold drop, a man who wants the smell of his neighbours to vanish from his skin, who wants to taste what is beyond the scum and effluent of the village ditch. And don't tell me each drop he takes to glisten his body will never be neutral, though he holds each clear spill with a quality. And it isn't just the water. It's the way his hands take the water from the tap to his body. It's the way he attends each pour. It's the way he decants the water back and forth as if receiving instruction for the repetition of the names of God. And it's the way he knows his poverty without privacy, and the way, though the water is free, he takes careful litres.
Today, we visit the Artsound Poetry Archives to hear Judith Beveridge read in 1994 at the Australian Defence Force Academy.
The next poem I wrote after reading an article in the Sydney Morning Herald describing a rather bizarre incident in Venezuela where there appears to be some kind of slick that covers some of the highways there, and nobody seems to really be able to understand what it is or what it's really composed of, even though they've got many experts in from all over the world to try and analyse it. And it makes the roads there incredibly dangerous and lots of people have been killed on them. So it seemed to me to be just one of these incredibly mysterious, almost inexplicable things that reminded me often of South American novels, that sort of magic realism I think they've been coined. So I called the poem A South American Tale, and it assumes the voice of somebody there just really trying to think up his own explanations for what this thing might be and recount other people's explanations as well. I've asked the poetry of my compatriots. I've asked insomniacs, somnambulists, and those who owe a debt to the night. I've asked engineers, street sweepers, and 70 corrupt officials, even the gypsy in the hills, the one who sings at midnight through a carried tooth and exposes the moon. I've asked children singing in pulverised limestone, drying up the slick. I've asked the laundress spraying stains off overalls. I've asked the priests at the wreckage sites praying like pressurised air, blowing stains off a motorway. Some say Satanissimo is back with guerrillas. The rich say raw sewage from the slums. The stupid say the Guatemalans, the pitiless the Paraguayans. Everyone says someone's making big money. And I admit, I've declared, to preserve the pseudo-respect of my friends. It's oil bleeding from a heated tarmac. It's the rubber of frayed tyres. Listen, have you ever been put to shame by disclosure of a frailty? Once I swerved too much for revenge. Once I sang our national songs with the windows down. I was sick of the agonies the road exposed, and of the highway deaths of my countrymen. My friend has told me, when the sun is high on the mesas of Patagonia, you can see the shadow of the earth. Could this, after all, be just a shadow? Now when I'm driving, I dream of afternoons under alders, of walking along canals and trottoirs, and worrying only about the excrement of poodles. I wonder, have you read our novels? The ones that make myths out of fatalism, families, feuds, and centuries of extraordinary events. Listen, even they have not prepared us for this. I've asked the shawled woman, the one who bribes anacondas with rats and marmosets. Tonight she will eat of the blind, six-legged goat and drink the blood of a snoutless pig. Can you understand why I want to get out? We've all invented explanations, asked specialists, experts, pundits, freaks, nuts, aficionados, any hag with a charm and boa. We've seen the men from the National Commission on Television and the federal judge who is investigating. We've quoted from the Corruption Dictionary, volumes 1 and 2, because we've asked so many bums and hobos and heard too many officials say, agitators, provocateurs. But a woman who sits on the roadway and paints windowpane butterflies for $1 and lets them fly into the sunset for a peso told me it's the souls of the so far gone. Her own hands were dusted with powdered rock, sand, the ash of raw cement. And I was astounded by the blend of greens and golds seeping out of her hands, the smoky half-tones of dusk, her clear call to the dead. I believed her. Later I climbed 7 stucco flights to her yellow kitchen, my gratitude spilling into all the avenues and back streets of the barrio. But then all she'd say was, it's lousy asphalt, its opponents dumping oil. It was then I went back to my feverish books. I really drove again. Now I no longer believe in the road, enough to follow it out. Listen, can you write to me? Tell me about your trees and your walks along the canals. Next I'll write to you about the quetzal that flew out of the cool shadows of a tunnel, about what it said as it squawked, stood in the light and lashed its tail. This is another poem about the sea. It's called The Fisherman. They have always reminded me of lace makers. The way they stand at the shore looking at the sea, as if it is an open page of knots, never a closed fabric stitched by needles. And the way they stand as if darning a yacht, a bird, distant waves breaking in circles, the passages the moon takes out through the cliffs. In their baskets are things found in the hands of needleworkers, haberdashers. and see how they sit in the garn at dusk, running threads into eyelets, then bringing them back and exposing an intimate dark. And how they love the moon in a scandalous design, as if they were assured that the night would not end without rapture or the meridians to paradise. And see how they breathe out clouds of cold, the sea bunched about their wrists in cuffs. How they take the white spray like skeins to their fingers, reading it for the spinnaker of a fish, for the storm in an islet, for the music sewn in like pearls, for gulls flying out from the dunes. In a chivalry of lines, they listen to the sea, to the shells, to their reels click in an amethyst quiet, to Odysseus step out of the water, shawled in their sunstone-coloured nets, his hand on his heart in a gesture of disclosure, only the moon now offering them sight over the waves as they too lift their arms into the sky. This next one is written from the point of view of a concubine of Marco Polo. It's just called Marco Polo's Concubine Speaks Out. I think it's full of anachronisms. Marco, this letter paper is pinned against the sun. Where are you? Wind is blowing in the chrysanthemums. Somewhere a trine drifts and a butterfly luffs in the breeze like a sampan. If only I could be on the harbours where ships sail in with pearls, elephants' tusks and hawksbill turtles. But I'm here, weeping and tamping tears on damask, trafficking in gossip and opium. Marco, what shall I do? Ruin myself with rhubarb and ginger? Drink tea potent as dragon's saliva? I'd rather sip the Chianti dispatched from the ruined cellars of your gaze. Listen, yesterday, one of the Zambezi slaves, her hair black and tight as peppercorns, offered me this. Pomegranates on a lacquered dish, pale as washed eggs. It was the coded news of the Empress's kimono loosened onto marble. Marco, was it your voice darting up like a dragonfly, embezzling water from her innermost fountain? Did you turn droplets into free passages for the sun, each a prophet of porphyry and opal, or facet from the luminous cabochon of the Empress's smile some intimate crystal? Oh, Marco, be careful. This palace is headed by sexless men. They dress as beggars and leave for Omei Mountain. And the Emperor's displeasure can come like a whirlwind from the Gobi if you don't return with boxes of rhinoceros horn and a ridiculous price for the porcelain. My heart feels heavy as an abacus. Who'll do its audit? I wish I could be the woman I saw on the temple road to Tientsin. She worked seeds from a pine cone and gathered scentless flowers. She lay with her face to the south and traded sleep for the sun. I still dream of your touch and of your kisses pasted like slogans of oat flour and ink on every doorway in Fukien. I shuffle perimeters of empty days and cry into a pillow book. Marco, if you come back, bring some ruby pink wine. I'll bring spring couplets and kisses more loaded with strokes and decadence than the weasel hair brushes of a Song dynasty painter. If not, I'll make a shrine for loneliness out of lang lang and sedatives. I'll blow dandelions slowly across the strings of my mandolin to imitate the cranes flying low over slender West Lake and over the Changbai Mountains, leaving for the winter. Where I lived in India, which was for about 3 months in the north in Punjab, there were a couple of cows out the back, and every morning the woman from next door would come and collect the cow dung and fashion them into the sort of flat, round discs that they'd then generally paste on the side of their house for the sun to bake, and they sell them or use them as fuel. This poem is for her and it's called The Dung Collector. Each morning she wipes the sweat that runs from under the red departer veiled across her face and lifts another load with a gasp. Soon she'll sit with her stupors of dung and hallow the flies. Soon she'll pray each stack into the day's chapatis, each new vat of dung into a tureen of dal to stir above the evening smoke. And she'll work another hour or two raking the unbaked yet steaming dung from the mud. I have seen heifers given more freedom to wander the earth than this woman who carries another load to her wall than chance with the traffic. She could almost be any woman humming at a task, moving a ladle through vichyssoise in a perfumed apartment off a sunny boulevard, watching light slip into a room like a spoon into ingredients for Hollandaise sauce, while she contemplates the arrival of guests, the early yellowing of the alder leaves. Clearly, though, this is not about workmanship, not about having a thankful heart in a beautiful place, not about being a speck in the slurry of a rushing Punjabi street, or about a woman who must save herself by labour and prayers. It's about a woman who must live under the anus of a cow as if it were her star, who must slap dozens of discoloured moons onto the side of her house for an orange sun to bake, who hears the sighs of the world as her bracelets slip up and down her arms like the songs of insects in overflowing grass, about a woman who bends to scoop dung into a dish each morning with her arms and hands and looks straight into my eyes.
Today on Poetry on the Radio, we've heard Judith Beveridge reading at the Australian Defence Force Academy in 1994. Tune in again next week for more of this historic recording. For ArtSound FM, I'm Peter Searles.
The Rhyming Bugle. On Monday, May 12 at 7 p.m. at Smith's Alternative in Civic, Jeff's Poetry presents Andrew Taylor and S.K. Kellen. Andrew Taylor is the author of 18 books of poetry, including Collected Poems, Salt, UK, 2004, and Coogee Poems, with artwork by Travis Taylor, Barden Press, 2021. He has published much literary criticism, including Reading Australian Poetry, University of Queensland Press, 1987, written the libretti for two operas, and translated poetry from German and Italian. He divides his time between Sydney and Wiesbaden, Germany. Canberra-based S.K. Kellen's most recent collections are A Happening in Hades, 2020, and The Cult of What Comes Next, 2025, both published by Punter and Wattman. On Monday, May 19 at 7 p.m, in collaboration with That Poetry Thing, Recent Work Press presents two of its new collections. Ross Donlan will read from The Naming of Clouds. He convenes poetry events and publishes Mark Time Books in Castlemaine, Victoria. He has published 7 books of poetry, 1 co-authored with Trish O'Hare, 5 chapbooks and 2 educational books, Kickstarting Poetry 1 and 2, with Trish O'Hare. He has won several poetry awards and is represented in numerous anthologies in Australia and the UK. James Lucas will read from his new collection, Jack Mundy in Red Square. He has long taught English at Sydney Grammar School and has been much published in anthologies and periodicals. His volume Rare Bird was shortlisted for the Ann Elder Award. Plus, open mic, sign up on the night. Marion, the ACT Writers' Centre, has launched its inaugural Finding Beauty Poetry Prize, honouring Roger Green, an environmental advocate, writer and editor, lover of poetry and thinker. Entries can be submitted via the Marion website until midnight on Monday, May 19. Poetry on the Radio is produced on unceded First Nations country in the studios of ArtSound FM in Canberra. Series presenters are Kimberly K. Williams and Peter Searles, who produced the program with Peter Monaghan. Our theme is an imagining of an ancient Greek hymn to the muse Calliope by Gregorio Paniagua and the Atrium Musica de Madrid.